I've just always tried to find folks that were really much smarter than me, and listen to what they had to say and learn from them. And, you know, as a leader, my real job was to get as many of those people around me as I could, let them do what they needed to know, or they really knew how to do. But they're all very intelligent, very decent, very honorable folks, which is what I believe is the real root of my success.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 53 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by Robert Mandel, more commonly known as Bobby, who is a retired US ambassador to Luxembourg under President Barack Obama, and currently serves on the boards and executive committees of the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History and Human Rights First in New York City. He's a member of the Board of Trustees of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting and Center for New American Security. Alongside this, Bobby is a partner in Velocitas Venture, a medical device company, and Reactive Core, a technology company. Bobby began his career as a lawyer before taking over the family business and serving in various roles, including its vice president, president chairman, and chief executive officer of what was then the Greater Construction Corporation from 1983 up until 2005. In that period, they built and sold over 13,000 homes in Central Florida. Greater was then sold in 2005 to Meritage Homes, the sixth largest home builder in America. So, as you can see from this introduction, Bobby really does have a huge depth and breadth of experience to share with us in this episode. And I was particularly interested to hear his thoughts and experiences around how he had to change and flex his leadership approach whilst working for the US State Department. It brings a new angle that we've not explored on the show before, and I really hope you're going to find it interesting and, as always, take huge value from it. So, without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with former ambassador and business leader, Bobby Mandel. Bobby, a very, very warm welcome to the podcast. I'm super pleased to have you with us today. First of all, let me just ask, how are you and whereabouts in the world are we talking to you from?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you for asking. I'm in Washington, D.C., where I spend a good bit of my time, and it's home, as well as Florida, which is where we have our legal residence and generally permanent residence. Based upon some of the work I have, I'm here in Washington a lot, so we found a place up here and we live here. Great friends here and great opportunities here, and I serve on a bunch of boards up here, which is what brought me here to begin with, and glad to be able to be here.
Amazing. And thank you in advance for your time. And talking of the work that you do, bringing you to DC, this is always the context question I like to ask, and it's often a challenge for people to give the short answer to this. But can you just share with the listeners sort of a little bit of background and a brief overview of your career journey? Because it's been pretty varied, right?
It has. I've had several careers in my life, and I think I still have at least a couple in front of me. But I'm a native Floridian, and when I was born in Florida, it was a tiny little burg of a state, and now there's, I think, 30 million people there, so it's grown quite a bit. In Orlando, which is really where I'm from, it was, I think it was maybe 50,000 people at one time when we lived there. Now it's the SMSA is 2 million, so it's also grown quite a bit. From Orlando, I went to the University of Florida for both undergraduate school and law school. I practiced law in a little tiny town called Punta Gorda, Florida, known for a number of things, not the least of which is that Hurricane Charley made landfall there and kind of destroyed the town back in the mid-80s. After which, I was kind of recruited by my dad's lawyer to come back into the family business after I had effectively started with another couple of guys, a law firm down there, and grew it fairly significantly. But my dad's lawyer decided that I needed to be in the family business, and so I did join the family business, where my father put me in the field as a laborer for a fairly significant period of time, and I learned the home building business with a lot of encouragement from my pop from the ground up. After about 10 or so years of being in business with him, I bought the company from him and really changed it to the extent of being far more aggressive. And we finally sold that company in 2005, where I then joined the company that bought us called Meritage Homes for a while as their Florida president and chairman or whatever we call ourselves. Left there in 2007. I actually met Obama in 2007, early 2007, and I really liked him. And so I signed up with the Obama folks and helped the president. Initially, after he won, he appointed me to something called the President's Export Council, where I really began to understand the concept of international trade, which is what we were all about, doing free trade agreements and such. And then in 2011, received a call asking me to become the ambassador to Luxembourg. They apparently had a bit of a problem there and said, well, you know, please go fix it. So I did. And I served as United States Ambassador in Luxembourg from 2011 to 2015. When I came back to Washington and to Florida, I was asked to join some boards, one of which is the Smithsonian Institute Natural History Museum Board, and one of which is the Human Rights First Board. And I also joined a board called the Center for New American Security, CNAS. So I got to do a number of different things here. And then in about 2018 or so, I had gone to work at the State Department a little bit, taught new ambassadors, had a we affectionately refer to it as charm school, but it's ambassador school. And then I was selected to be a member of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Board back in 2019, where I currently serve. We are the funders of Public Broadcasting System and NPR, as well as a bunch of other radio stations. And we do programming, and we do a lot of, I think, very important things for our country. And effectively, I serve there as the chairman of the Budget, Finance, Audit, Investment Committees, which has really taken a whole lot of time since we receive about $500 million a year from the federal government and distribute it. So that keeps you kind of busy. And that's pretty much what I've been doing here in Washington, D.C.
Amazing. And Bobby, there's a whole load of sort of really meaty questions that I want to get into and ask you. But listening to you talk there, there's one really practical question that I'm curious to ask. You said when you received the call or took the call about becoming Obama's ambassador in Luxembourg, like, do those calls actually come from the president, or do they come from someone on his team?
They actually come from my call was from a fellow by the name of Pete Rouse, who was the chief of staff to the president. He was in consigliere to the president, and he still is. As a practical matter, he serves on President Obama's board of directors today.
Got you.
And he's a great friend of mine, and that's where the phone call actually comes from. But he did say, do you know where Luxembourg is? And I said, sort of. And he said, me too. So I've learned a lot since then.
And talking of learning a lot, what would you say are maybe two or three of the main leadership lessons you've learned along the way that really sort of stick with you?
Well, I think, you know, success is kind of an amalgam, and leadership is as well. But the truth of the matter is that I think that I've been successful for two main reasons. Number one, I've had ridiculously extremely important and brilliant mentors. And these are people who in my life have decided that they'd like to see me be successful, as a result of which they've been very willing to teach me and to guide me and to lecture me on the kind of the ways of life, the ways of business, and really the ways of humanity, which has been a really important part of my success, I would say. And secondly, I've really learned that surrounding yourself with people that are way smarter than you has been really a good deal of my success. So I attribute my success to that. I've just always tried to find folks that were really much smarter than me and listen to what they had to say and learn from them. And, you know, as a leader, my real job was to get as many of those people around me as I could, let them do what they needed to know or they really knew how to do, and recognizing that we all have blemishes, and just to try to manage around those because they were, if I would hire them, I'd hire them because they really knew what they were doing, and make sure that I understood what they either weren't good at or didn't like, or made sure that I, you know, backed them up with what they needed. So, but they're all very intelligent, very decent, very honorable folks, which is what I believe is the real root of my success.
And your mentors, were they mentors who you went and found and approached yourself, or were they people who for some reason saw something in you kind of at those points in your career and decided that they wanted to offer up their support to you? Which way did it work?
Both. My first mentor was a fellow by the name of Leo Wotitsky, who was really one of the kindest, most decent men I've ever known. He was, when I graduated from law school, I really didn't want to go back to Orlando and be a pretty successful guy's son and just kind of live my life being in the shadow of a giant, so to speak. So I decided to leave, not go back to Orlando, and talking to one of my law professors who said, you know, there's a guy named Leo Wotitsky in Punta Gorda who I'd like you to go meet. You know, the rest is kind of history. I went down there. I met this guy named Leo Wotitsky. At that point in time, he was 60 and told me that, and I was 24, I think, 23 or 24. And he told me we were going to build a great law firm. And I went, okay, not really having any idea what he was talking about, because at that point in time, I think there were 17,000 people in the county of Charlotte County. And I think I was the 13th or 14th lawyer in the whole county. But he really did give me a sense of what it's like to be a leader and what it's like to be honorable, I would best describe it. He was very bright and very learned, and he was interested in me. And he was interested in me, number one, as a person, and as he developed me into, you know, I think a fairly good lawyer. And my second was our lawyer in, I say our lawyer, my dad's lawyer in Orlando, a fellow by the name of John Lowndes, who's a terrific human being. He just recently died. But he kind of plucked me out and said, okay, we're going to teach you how to lead this company. He never used those words. But he, along with my dad, who was also my mentor, taught me, you know, how to be a person and how to think and how to act and what the right thing to do is and how all that works and as it relates to business. He was a brilliant lawyer, John Lowndes was, but he was also just an entirely decent human being. And then my other mentor, of course, was my dad, who was very interested in seeing me successful. Although he was really hard on me, neither Leo nor John Lowndes were particularly difficult to be mentored by. My pop was, he was my pop. He was hard-nosed, but he taught me more than, of course, anybody did because of his desire to see me be successful.
Yeah. And Bobby, as well, when you're talking sort of to the previous question, you also mentioned one of the things that you think has helped you be successful is really hiring kind of brilliant people. I think you used the phrase kind of people that are better than you even.
Smarter than you. Better and smarter, but certainly smarter than me.
Yeah, sorry, better is quite subjective, isn't it? Smarter than you.
Right.
I mean, that's something that sort of many of us will have heard before. And I think there's certainly a percentage of people who perhaps don't act on that because they find it scary and right. They kind of worry about sort of getting perhaps shown up by other people or whatever. Just wonder if you've got any tips you can share on kind of how you approach that, really sort of effectively leading and getting the best out of people, kind of really, really smart people. Is there anything that particularly worked well for you that stands out?
Yeah, what really works well is incentives. So when you find people that you find to be smarter than you, you also have to give them a stake in whatever it is that you're doing. At least that's been my experience. And so what I had decided when I bought the company from my dad was to share the ownership of that company with people that I wanted to have around me all the time and give them a real stake in the success of the company. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't matter how much you pay them. It's not the same as them believing that if you're successful and they're successful, that they'll receive anything more than some monetary benefit from it. So with that, I decided to make sure that they were not just compensated well, but that they were partners of mine. And I think the concept of partnership in the ownership of a company is really important, because without a stake, you know, it's simply a job. With a stake, it's more of a life choice. So, I mean, you can always get out of it. You can always buy people out. You can always fire them and pay them and all those kind of things. But that really never entered my mind. What entered my mind was that they need to feel like, which they did, and they obviously were, we were all successful as a result of it. And you know, the way I looked at it, Ben, was that I would rather have 51% of something than 100% of nothing. And so that's kind of my way of helping decide what's important in terms of surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you.
And then if we jump ahead slightly, so you've had a very successful career starting in business and then moving into government and politics, which isn't an area I've got much experience in at all, if any, but I'm really, really curious. I assume you did have to adapt your leadership style and operate in a different ways when you stepped into that government politics in environment. So what was that like? Kind of what changes, adaptations did you have to make?
You certainly have to change. There's no way that you can take what you do in business and make it part of the government to the extent that, you know, there's no profit motive here. In business, you have the opportunity to have what you do become financially rewarding to you. In government, it's just not that way. You just don't. I mean, I imagine that there have been people, and I'm sure there continue to be people, who have profited from government while they're in government service. But generally speaking, you're really in service to the government. You're in service to the people. And as I saw it, when I entered government, I gave up the idea of, I think the word is pecuniary results, and decided that my main objective and my real objective was the betterment of the United States of America abroad. And reputationally, financially, business-wise, for the businesses that were doing work in the country that I served. So yeah, it really is entirely different from that perspective. I mean, there are different rules, of course. There are different ethics rules that apply. In the business world, business ethics are something that you have that are internal, respectively. You decide what's right and what's wrong, and you decide what you're willing to do or how you're willing to do it. I mean, and most people who are really successful have an internal set of ethical standards which they follow, both because they think it's the right thing to do and because it gives them personal satisfaction. In government, it's not that way. In government, there are, you know, especially at the State Department, there are ethics rules that you follow that are both written down because they say, okay, these are the things you can do and you can't do. And more importantly, you have to think about the effect that you're having on the entire population of another country, because what you do and what you say often is reported either in the news or on TV or whatever it is. And so the concept of being ethical in government is just the same kind of rules apply in terms of your internal rules. But they're written down. There are also rules that are written down that if you violate them, the Hatch Act, for example, I mean, you can't politic for or do anything other than give money to any candidates while you're the United States ambassador overseas. And if you do, you could be prosecuted for it. I don't think they prosecute many people for that, but it's still one of those things you obviously say to yourself, I don't want to do that anyway. I'll never forget that while I was an ambassador, I was back home, and President Obama was there for a party and a dinner, that I was invited to. But the truth of the matter is that that wasn't something I could do or should do or wanted to do, because I didn't want to get people to give money to the president because I was going to be there. I mean, not that I was going to have any effect on them, but I just didn't want to have any appearance of impropriety. As a lawyer, one of the things you learn about is the appearance of impropriety. And I felt the same way about that experience. So I didn't go. People certainly were not there to see Bobby Mandel. They were certainly there to see Barack Obama. But just the concept of being there for me wasn't what I was willing to do. So it's not a legal particular thing necessarily, but it's something that you follow and you think about.
And did you continue to seek out mentors and coaches kind of when you was kind of doing your ambassador job, or is that something that was more in the earlier parts of your career?
Oh, Ben, I still do. I mean, whenever there's something, I mean, yesterday I had lunch with a friend of mine who was an ambassador to a different continent that I was on. And, you know, we spoke about things that were just interesting to me about how he did his job and what he did and why he did it and what he was doing, because you can always learn. And I don't learn by reading very much. Unfortunately, I'm more of a communicative learner. And I find that the way that I have succeeded relates to experiences and relationships that I have rather than books that I've read. So that's why I continue to seek out people who both I like and who have knowledge that's far beyond any knowledge that I would have. I don't consider them mentors necessarily. If I had a job that I was really interested in learning about, I would, as I actually do at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But it's now more a matter of kind of learning for my own benefit, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. When we spoke prior to the recording, I think you mentioned how one of the other things that you thought had helped you be successful was relationships, and how it was all about relationships, which with the passage of more and more time, I just think more and more that our success as leaders, it's not about what we can do or execute ourselves or how smart we are, right? It's all about, do we have the right contacts and networks and relationships that are big enough and strong enough to allow us to make requests of people kind of when we need them, right?
One of the things that, to me, makes it all worthwhile are the relationships that you both create and find. And you decide, effectively, how long those relationships are going to last in terms of whether that's something that you particularly like to pursue. But from my perspective, it's what it's all about. It's the creation and maintenance of relationships with people who you enjoy their company. You enjoy listening to them, enjoy learning from them. They most times for me, the relationships that I have that are probably the strongest are people that I have either nothing in common with or very little in common with, other than perhaps a set of values that are the same. One of my dearest friends is Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, and he and I are so completely different from backgrounds and those kinds of things. But just, I just really like, because he's just really smart. And not only that, he's totally different than I am. And I get so much from that because we do have exactly the same values. And my business partner and I, who I've been partners with since 1993, four or five, something like that, six maybe, he and I are so completely different on a political from a political perspective, but we really share an exact value system, which is why we've been great partners for the last 25 years. So those are the kinds of things that I'm talking about in terms of relationships. It's hopefully mutually beneficial, but it's certainly beneficial to me in terms of how I go about deciding whether or not I'm going to talk to someone else or see someone else more than just once. And it's also just really interesting. I mean, I think that one of the things that's made me successful is I'm really curious about most things, and I'd like to learn, and I like to do things that are learning. And when I'm becoming more cognizant of things that I just never knew about. So, you know, Ben Hodges is from Quincy, Florida. I've never even been to Quincy, Florida, although I'm a Floridian, and it's a tiny town in Northwest Florida. So his background, his growing up experiences were so totally different than mine, but I certainly learned a lot. you know, that's kind of how I look at all that.
And I'm curious, when you've been building teams throughout your career, either in business or in the State Department, and looking to bring in really smart people around you, when you're doing that, were you consciously looking for people who shared a value set, but other than that were very different to give you that diversity of thought, or did that sort of happen naturally by chance?
Oh, I don't think anything's happens by chance anymore, Ben. although I don't think I consciously do that. In the government, you can't do that. I mean, in the government, you're generally given people and you have to deal with them. You work with the people that are assigned to you, so to speak. You don't have to keep them, but you certainly have to got to give them a chance. And that's the most important part of all that, is you've got to give them a chance. But, you know, aside from that, you don't have to associate yourself with people you don't want to associate yourself with. And therefore, in business especially, you kind of make a decision not based upon the fact that they're completely different than you, but based upon the fact that you think that you'll share the same values and you'll have the same results. You know, in the business, when I was in the home building business, for example, taking care of people was the most important thing we could do. And it was really important to me that my business partners really understood the concept of taking care of people, which they did. They did a great job at it, much better than I did, probably. That's kind of how it worked for me. I don't know how else to describe that.
So I'm really curious to ask you a question about that, how you said in the home building business, the most important thing was to take care of your people. Like, for me personally, that goes to the very core of my beliefs about leadership, which probably comes from my upbringing and time at the Royal Military Academy in the UK. But there's still lots of businesses that don't have that view, right? Where almost the people are just a means to make profit and hit a number. It's not a particularly well-formed question. I'm not even sure what the question is, but I just found it fascinating that you said that's the most important thing when not every business sees it that way, do they?
Well, they may or may not. I think most successful businesses actually do. But when you think about it, what it really boils down to is attitudinal. And if your attitude is such that that's something that's important to you, then generally speaking, I've always remembered you probably never heard of Mr. Rogers. He was a PBS star of some note. He was from Winter Park, Florida, which is why I kind of learned a lot about him. Now that I'm at Corporation for Public Broadcasting, it even becomes more so. But what he said one time that attitudes are caught, not taught. Mm. And that just stayed with me, because if you have an attitude of gratitude, which they wrote a book about, of course, but you know, if your attitude is such that you do value people and you do value, you know, putting yourself in their position as it relates to whatever it is you're dealing with, I think that you find more success, and you certainly find more satisfaction from doing that, because you know, number one, you sleep pretty well at night, and number two, you have a view that what you do is you serve people. Of course, there's a profit motive to it. You couldn't do it and give it away. You couldn't do it and lose money doing it. But by the same token, it doesn't cost anymore to do that. I think it really benefits you from kind of taking a look at, you know, your product in light of who's using it, who's buying it, who's dealing with it. And I think we sold 14,000 houses in Central Florida. And number one, to my knowledge, to my recollection for sure, we were never sued by any person that owned one of our homes. That doesn't mean that we didn't build bad homes or that we didn't make mistakes, but we always figured out how to solve the problem, and we did. And secondly, and more importantly, you know, gave you the satisfaction of knowing that some other that a family who you sold a home to, you know, you housed families. I used to take my kids trick-or-treating in the communities that we'd build, and we built communities. We didn't just build single. We didn't just build a house here and a house there, obviously, to build that many houses in 40 years. But you build for families who live there, who hopefully will make money on the money that they've given you when they sell their house, but hopefully enjoy where they're living and, you know, don't wake up every day and go, God, that son of a gun who built this house, he just didn't build it right. That's how you do it. And I think that was part of the root of our success was that we really took care of people. I can't tell you how that translates to every business, because, you know, if you're in the computer tech business and you build widgets, I don't know how that relates to the person that's on the other end using it, but you facilitate ways of them using whatever it is that you build. So
yeah, that makes sense. And Bobby, one more brief question, if we can, which is more a reflection of mine that I've been having for a while. It's a slightly, as we were chatting before we hit record, slightly abstract, illogical question. But having worked in the business and sort of state department, I'm just curious to get your view on it. And this has become, I've seen this more sort of the past 2.5 years, certainly here in the UK with the last general election and then COVID. And so my reflection is that more and more we're seeing our political leaders sort of criticize what the public, the media like to describe as poor leadership. And everyone's an armchair critic, I think, of our political leaders. And I start to think, like, is it perhaps unfair to try and judge those political leaders by the same sort of standards as we would judge our military or business leaders? Because it's a very, very different scenario, right? In political leaders, the opposition are always looking to catch them out or undermine them because it's how they might get into power. The media are always looking for that soundbite that contradicts one from 12, 18, 24 months prior. And then again, in the business world, like business leaders just don't have the scenario where in 4 or 5 years' time, we're going to go out to all of their customers, clients, suppliers, employees, past, present, and future, and say, hey, we want you to vote on the next CEO. So it's just an entirely different world. So I just wonder, like, judging them by the same sort of standards, leadership viewpoint, just the more I think about it, seems to be quite unfair. So I just wonder, like, what's your view and take on that, on political leadership, that sort of thing?
So I think it's a false premise, frankly, because business leaders and business executives are really competitors. They're under assault from the competing products and the services that they have. Their job isn't any easier than a politician's, but the public officials, including appointed ones, really work for the public. And that's a tremendous responsibility that they more than likely sought out. And confidence in our government is critical to maintaining support of our democracy. And it seems to me like that's more the politicians than the media who have been undermining that for their own political benefits. That's just my take on your question of what's the difference. And when you think about it, in terms of leadership, it really relates, in my judgment, to character and integrity. That's what I kind of look for, whether I'm looking at a business leader or I'm looking at a political leader, just how I roll. And to me, it creates a reputation. And, you know, everybody has a different view of that, obviously. That's why we have elections, and that's why we have parties and those kind of things. But the truth of the matter is that it's really, from my perspective, you can't really compare it. You don't elect CEOs. You can't elect CEOs, or you can, but the board of directors does that, and the people who are owners of the stock elect a board of directors that selects the CEO. So I mean, that's how it starts. But it always is with the financial, generally speaking, anyway, it's with the financial view of this is best for our financial interests. There's probably as many styles, Ben, as there are companies, as a practical matter, in terms of the leadership part of it. But I do think that integrity and character and is what creates the reputation, both of the business, of the product, and I think that's just important. But I have some experience with large companies like the United States government, but I don't have experience with large companies like General Motors or those kind of things. So I don't know how all that works, frankly.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Really interesting to hear your take on that. Bobby, believe it or not, we've been chatting there for 38 minutes. It's flown by. So on behalf of kind of me and everybody listening, thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights, experience and wisdom. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you, and I'm sure everybody listening will get great value from it, and it brings a really interesting different dynamic to the podcast. So on behalf of everybody, thank you very much for your time today.
Ben, it's a pleasure talking to you, and good luck to you. I think that it's a really important topic that you deal with, and I think that there's going to be probably as many views on your topic as there are people out there listening to you. But there are some common denominators, which hopefully you'll be able to, you know, describe and help folks with. It's a good thing. Good thing that you do. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode, folks. But more importantly, as always, I really hope you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result of what you just heard. And before you go, a few quick reminders for you. Please do take just 2 minutes to complete that podcast listener survey via the link in the show notes in order to be in with a chance of winning one of those free sets of the most recommended books by guests on the show. And if you are getting value from the show, please do take a couple of minutes as well to rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it really does help us to continue growing the podcast and bringing you more and more great interviews with leaders and subject matter experts. And finally, if you've still got time after all of that, please do stop by my website, www.ben-morton.com, to learn more about my work and how I may be able to support you now or in the future. That's it for this episode. I will see you again very soon. Take care and lead on.